It's Thursday, November 15th, 2012, and welcome to episode 140 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And this week, we've got a special show for you. We're going to be talking a little bit about a presentation I did this week with our Ed Scholars group, and we used a little bit of technology. We used some of the clicker technology.
You give them a chance to get some hands-on experience with those tools.
Yeah, so we'll share a little bit of that presentation. And then also, since our last episode, Windows 8 has come out. Our last episode, we spent quite a bit of time on the new iPad, the iPad 4, whatever we're calling it now. So this time, I thought we'd spend a little bit of time with all of the new and innovative things Windows 8 is doing, both on the software side and the hardware side. Mm-hmm. And then this week, we're going to share a couple of technology picks of the week. I'm going to have a cloud pick. And Cindy, you're going to talk a little bit about
guidebooks.
About a guidebook and application.
An application that I'll be taking with me to the National Council for the Social Studies Conference.
Yep. So we should mention Cindy's on the road again.
That's right.
So we're going to have to change our theme song here for you or something. But we're ready to go here. So here we go. To start us off this episode, I thought I would share one of the events that I participated in last night. Last night, I was invited to attend one of the Ed Scholars meetings, and Ed Scholars is a registered student organization here on campus, and they were having their student elections last night. So one of the things that they asked that I do is help them with the voting for their election of officers.
Oh, very good.
So what we did was we had the Turning Point clicker set, and we had 50 clickers with a receiver that plugs into a laptop, and they had the election we voted for president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, and historian, I believe. That was an interesting experience because we passed out the clickers to all the audience. Luckily, I had some of the nominations up front, but we were able to add, ad hoc as nominations went on. But one thing that kind of threw me a little bit of a curve, we had a couple of ties. So we had to have a runoff election on a couple of the officer seats, which wasn't a big deal, but it was nice to have that flexibility with the clickers and being able to vote on the fly, and then we were immediately tallied the results.
Right,
and things.
Those instant results. Are
so,
great.
We didn't display all of that to everyone in the crowd, but we had the officers back behind the scenes, and we shared the results. And then for the runoffs, we had to vote again for the people that tied. That worked out very well, and it gave the students the opportunity to use the clickers to see how they worked, and you'll see some.
Had many of them used them before?
No, they hadn't. One of the challenges with the clickers, and one of the nice things here in the ITC, we have a laptop that's kind of dedicated with that particular set. Because one of the first challenges is it uses radio frequency, and you always have to worry about what channel. And, pretty much by default on that particular set, it's like channel 41 or channel 44. But, you have to kind of calibrate them up front.
Right. So by having one that's ready to go, it makes it so much easier. It's sort of like back in the day when there was a projector on a cart. And a teacher had to reserve a projector for their classroom. Mm-hmm. Well, now that many teachers have them in their classroom, they use them so much more because it's set up and ready to go.
Right, yeah, and having everything there programmed ready to go. So it's just one less barrier to go over with. And then at the end, I had about 15 minutes or so just to kind of share. They asked me to share some of the educational technologies they would recommend for pre-service teachers. So I thought I might bounce that by you a little bit. I'll share a little bit of what I said, but how can you possibly in 15 minutes, share share everything you would like to? But of course, one of the things I mentioned was, our Tech Talk for Teachers podcast. If you listen to that monthly or twice a month now, that will keep you up to date with some of the trends and things. True. And I guess one of the things that I really want to instill on really any teacher, pre-service teachers or regular in-service teachers is, the learning never stops.
Right.
It's kind of the motto of this show, keep on learning.
It is. And that's what, when you said that, it was like, I would probably say learn from my mistakes mm-hmm. as much as the things that I do well, mm-hmm. because the things that have gone wrong have taught me a lot more mm-hmm. with technology.
And part of that is that big reflection piece in there, and reflecting back on the experiences, like, how can I make this activity or whatever it is better next time?
Right. And the biggest thing I found that I do with technology that is a bad habit that I need to break is just wasting time. Mm-hmm. Because I often find, if I find high quality sites and high quality resources and bookmark them, mm-hmm. and there's plenty of tools available to do right. that. We all know that.
Right. And that was one that I shared, the Digo bookmark right. site. I shared my Digo site with them.
And so the importance of establishing your library sort of like that. Because I find myself searching over and over again for the same things that I right. don't bookmark and I think I remember. And then also, you know, kind of the reinventing the wheel, mm-hmm. that when somebody's done it well out there, to right. look at those ideas and look at their experiences and mm-hmm. then sort of tweak it to work with the students or the individuals mm-hmm. that I'm working with.
Well, those were the two big things I shared, the Digo for the social bookmarking aspect mm-hmm. of it, and then also Twitter as a professional learning network.
Oh, sure.
And I, you know, we talked a little bit, of course, you know, 99% of them have Facebook accounts and everything, but right. not nearly that many have the Twitter accounts.
No.
But I kind of asked them to think a little bit about their digital footprints. And to think ahead a little bit whenever they graduate, whenever you get that job interview and that principal or human resources department is out there interviewing, you know, what type of digital footprint will you have whenever they type your name into Google?
Right.
Will they have a positive first impression or will it be a negative first impression? And then, of course, I can't go without talking about social networking and the grandma rule about, you know, putting things out there. Don't put anything out there you wouldn't want grandma to see.
Very true. And, you know, even though you may not put it on your Facebook, if someone else puts it on theirs and tags you,
right,
it's there.
Right.
And so
it's a share of a share of a share.
Absolutely. And so people see things and, you know, even though you take it down. And, you know, a student that's 21 now is going to be looking for a job very soon. Mm-hmm. And so even though it seems a long way away, it's not.
Right.
And so they have to start making that transition mm-hmm. into the professional world and right. thinking about how they're going to do that. I've seen young people that I know that have sort of aliases on their Facebooks
right.
and things like that, right. that it's not their full name mm-hmm. for that reason.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
Yeah, the other thing I shared with them was, you know, with the digital footprints and the, you know, the electronic footprints that we leave behind is even, you know, if you go out after the fact to kind of go back there and try to erase some of those footprints, some of them are unerasable.
Right.
So I shared with them the archive.org website mm-hmm. and the Wayback Machine.
Right.
I asked a couple of them to give me their high school web address. And we typed that in the Wayback Machine and, you know, it's like, well, this is what your website looked like in 2005, even though those servers have long been retired and gone.
Right. That they're not gone forever.
Right. And me, you being in the business of archival and Library exactly. of Congress and things, you know about all those digital assets and things that stick around.
And at one time, you know, it was the big major sites that were saved. But now
it's everything.
Everything. And so you can't assume that it's insignificant.
It's like everything except that one thing that you're looking for that you need to.
That I spend all my time looking yes. for again.
Yes. So anyway, that was interesting. Got a chance to get some of that technology into their hands. And it was a very practical, you know, real time where they could see some of the benefits of doing that. So,
well, and what a great way for them to learn to use the clickers just through experience like that. Because anytime we can play with technology and use it for personal reasons, it seems like it's just easier. It's not as intimidating as when you approach it from a professional perspective, because then you want to do it right. When you're doing it for personal reasons, then you don't care if you
right.
do something goofy
yeah.
and all that. And so I would probably say the other thing that I would encourage new teachers and that to do is go into your classroom and just play with the equipment and get comfortable with it, because that's the easiest way to save time down the road with that comfort level.
Right. And usually it's just having the time and making time as a new teacher, I know, is tremendously difficult to do sometimes. But if you don't spend that upfront time, as you said, if you're not comfortable, you're certainly not going to use it in front of 30, you know, students out there trying to figure it out on the fly.
And especially when they're all staring at you, exactly. Like you're supposed to know what you're doing. Then it just, it's kind of like when you're writing on the board, you spell words wrong right. That you know how to spell.
Right. But, you know, the good news is there's plenty of help out there, and then sharing some of the screencasts and the YouTube videos, with just a little bit of effort, and then building that professional learning network out there and having some friends to lean on really helps.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Okay, up next, I thought we would talk a little bit about the new release of Windows 8. Our last episode, the end of October, Windows 8 was just getting ready to come out, so we've not had the opportunity to talk about it here on Tech Talk for Teachers. So I thought we'd take a few minutes, and I've been playing with Windows 8 really for over a year, going back to some of the first betas. So I've kind of watched it evolve and develop, and it's really looking pretty good. It is a completely different interface, so it is going to be change for people.
It looks very cool. I mean, I think it sort of gives a more modern or edgy, feel to Windows.
Yeah, it's completely, graphically, it looks completely different.
It does.
One of the confusing aspects is they actually have two versions. They have the traditional, what we call x86, which runs on the Intel, which, you know, runs millions of applications, and they're calling that the, Windows 8 Professional.
Okay.
And then they have, you may have seen the Surface RT tablets. Mm-hmm. Being advertised, we talked a little bit before.
Right.
And that runs on the ARM processor, which means it's not compatible with all of the applications we've been accustomed to over the years. So, for example, like QuickBooks or Quicken or something like that, that would not run on the Windows Surface RT tablet. So there's some confusion out there. You need to be careful. You know, buy the device that, you know, you want to use. They've kind of made a clean break with the RT version.
Okay.
The trade-offs there is you get a much more battery life from the ARM processor. The disadvantage to it is that you're not getting the power of an Intel processor with the multitasking and the traditional PC experience, you know, that we've become accustomed to over the years.
So certain professions may lean towards one way more so than another, depending on what applications you're using.
And it's kind of like with the iPad and the Mac, too. You know, it's very, very similar there because the iOS does not run Macintosh applications. So that was a clean break between those systems. So Microsoft is going through, a similar evolution working through there. But one of the exciting things I saw recently, there's over 1,000 different devices already out on Windows 8.
Wow.
So, you know, if you stop and think about it, you've got your Toshibas, your HPs, your Dells, your Lenovos, all of these different vendors out there, Asus, Acer, you know, the list just goes on and on. That entire Windows ecosystem is now gearing up to support Windows 8, and there are a variety of new form factors, and one of them, I've been watching some TV commercials. Whenever you're attuned to technology, you kind of perk up whenever you see some of the technology commercials, but Lenovo has a couple of them out. I don't know if you've seen the Yoga, the little laptop. They've got a commercial out, but it is a kind of a laptop that turns into a tablet.
Yes.
You take the lid and turn it completely around.
Flip it
completely over, and then the keyboard is disabled and you just use it as a tablet.
Right.
And then they've got the tent mode and the laptop mode. And then the other form factor that we're going to start seeing coming out because everybody's gearing up for Christmas is the new we've already have the Surface RT tablets out by Microsoft, but we're going to start seeing a lot of vendors come out with touchscreen laptops and touchscreen tablets. So Lenovo's got another one coming out here, I believe the end of this week, called the Tablet 2, which is kind of back to the future because we're starting to see the old tablet PC form factors creep into this new stuff. So what interests me from a teaching and education perspective is that has a digitizing pin. So it essentially becomes like a smart
stylus.
Board. Yep, a stylus with pressure sensitivity and the accuracy of a pen.
Nice.
You know, finger painting and all of that. You can only be so accurate. But that pen tip with the handwriting recognition, and, you know, Windows has been working on that for years. And with their OneNote application, it's really starting to look like some of the pieces are coming together. And then throw in the new SkyDrive applications and the, you know, what they call their Live Essentials pack coming in. But having SkyDrive and your Office web apps, everything available out there in the cloud, we're kind of once again merging these two worlds of the cloud computing and the local computing.
Right.
But the problem with that, we're only as good as our internet access.
Exactly.
So it's going to be interesting seeing where things shake out here over the Christmas. But again, tons of new form factors. And, you know, I've been using the Asus ePad Transformer for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that has the touchscreen. It's kind of a netbook device.
Right.
And, you know, people for years have been saying, why would I ever want a touchscreen on a laptop device? And, my experience has been, you know, why wouldn't you want a touchscreen at this point? So you're going to see a lot of form factors come out. And, in fact, again, on TV, I'm starting to see commercials, like I said, from HP and Toshiba and Lenovo with touchscreen laptops.
And it's interesting to see that happening because, you know, I've often wondered, because there are some touchscreen desktops already, right?
Yes, yes.
And so to see that happening and, you know, I don't know if there are any touchscreen televisions yet.
Yeah, they're starting to come out.
And so that'll be interesting to see because really the 3D didn't take off like I think, you know, some people thought it would. And that wasn't something that appealed to me, but that one is the wireless. Mm-hmm. Which would be very attractive. And then, too, the touchscreen, you know, the interface that we could
Well,
do.
You know, the evolution there, again, is, you know, I hate to break the news, but we're such a transition period right now. You know, one of the trends we're going to see going into not this Christmas, but next Christmas is the really high definition, what they call the 4K television, beyond high definition now. You know, kind of like the Retina displays that Apple you know, is currently advertising that. And then you're turning your TV essentially into a computer.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, there's trade-offs with doing that. You know,
right.
With TV for years, you just turned it on, you know, forgot about it. But now then suddenly you're going to have to start managing apps and updates and turning it into a computer. And that may have a limited appeal for some
That's
people.
That's true. The updates and management.
But then the, you know, the other piece for that, you know, we're talking a little bit, another item in the news this week, Halo 4 came out.
Yep.
So people with their Xboxes, you know, hooking those up to their big screens.
Mm-hmm.
Windows 8 has a feature called Play 2. So if you're watching a Netflix movie, you can stream it wirelessly to your Xbox. Apple TV, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, you have to buy an Apple TV, but you can stream your iPad movies to an Apple TV device. Wirelessly, but then again, once again, you have to have a wireless router.
Right.
So all of these are little add-on pieces that we keep adding on to.
And the two worlds are sort of mingling side by side. They haven't quite merged yet with television and that. But I know I have HBO Go or HBO To Go on my iPad. Mm-hmm. And so I watch movies because we're subscribed to HBO at home. I watch them on my iPad sometimes whenever I'm, you know, traveling and things, or if I've missed a program that I want to see. And I've never been overly aware of the image quality, but I'm sure as they get better and better, I'll become more aware of that.
Well, we've got these three things. We've got the devices that we're dealing with.
Right.
And then we've got the content, as you mentioned, the HB Go, whatever it was. And then the third leg of that stool is the infrastructure, the wireless and the broadband capability, which we're sorely lacking in, you know, in this part
where
of Illinois, in rural Illinois. But it takes those three pieces, the devices, the content, and then the infrastructure, the broadband delivery. And, you know, any one of those can be a weak link.
Right.
And, you know, that's what the Battle of the Titans are right now going through and trying to figure out, you know, what's going to be the best way to go. And we were talking a little bit earlier before we started the show is there's just not a good way to go because you don't want to get locked into any one thing.
Exactly.
And, you know, unfortunately right now, that's kind of the way that we're headed until we get some of these broader standards out there. You know, it might take a decade or so to shake out again because we went through this in the the 80s. So we'll see. It's an interesting time. It's an exciting time. On Windows 8, just keep an open mind. And if you're a person that likes new things, they do have a lot to offer. It's just a little bit different way to think about things. But a lot of the pieces are starting to come together.
It looks very cool. It looks like it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It really has a different, it kind of goes away from that work feel.
Right. Yeah.
And that, but I'm just curious when it's actually going to apply to me, because mm-hmm. right now I'm not purchasing anything new and it doesn't look like anything I have is going to change. So some of us may not be impacted.
Right. And that's a decision that I'm kind of making coming here into the or in the market for a new tablet or tablet/PC. And will one of them work? And one of the big pluses for some of the new Windows 8 tablets coming out, they have a USB port.
Nice.
Full size. They have multi-user login, which is another big thing for teachers and educators and parents.
Absolutely.
Kindle, you know, we talked about, came out. They had the kids zone where
right.
that you can kind of wall off your Kindle.
So the library was specific. Yeah, a library just for them.
The Google tablets, the latest version of Google Android is starting to support some multi-user functionality. Windows Phone 8 that's getting ready to come out also has a multi-user account or a kids zone where you can kind of, you know, instead of buying, like, you know, I'm sure the gadget makers would love you to buy one device for every member of your family, but those of us that have to support families know that's not very economical
right.
sometimes. But having a multi-user device makes a lot of sense. And I am, again, a huge fan of having that expandable storage that I can throw something on a USB or an SD card.
Right.
That's the one weak point of the Nexus 7 that I bought this summer, is it does not have an expandable SD card, and it also does not have an HDMI out. So I can't connect it directly
sure.
to the TV. Not that, you know, I want to connect a 7-inch device, but I do that with my EPAD transformer. I do connect that HDMI to my big screen TV so I can watch movies.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
with a direct mm-hmm. direct wire cable, and it's very high quality, so. So again, lots of options in all of the different worlds. And as Christmas approaches, I think if you kind of watch TV, you're going to start seeing just tons and tons of commercials about all these different products that we've talked about.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like, how can we as teachers and educators go out there and leverage these devices to the best of our abilities
right.
out there for teaching and learning?
Get the most bang for our buck,
because yep.
we want something that's going to give us the most options and mm-hmm. capability to use it with different situations for both us as teachers and with our students.
Right. And, you know, I can guarantee you in January there's going to be a lot of gadgets starting to enter the schools that we've
oh,
not
yeah.
seen before. So
very cool.
My technology pick of the week this week relates to the SkyDrive service. I've been using SkyDrive for a few years now, and this week I recently received an update. And one of the features that I've been waiting for is something similar to Google Forms. And in SkyDrive, it's tied with the Excel spreadsheet program. And I recently got the update, and I'm logged into my SkyDrive account here.
Okay.
So we're just going to do a quick little demo here. And if I click on the Create button, there's something called Excel Surveys. So I'm going to click on Create Excel Survey. And since we just came up on Veterans Day, let's do a quick little survey, or let's do a multiple choice question here on
sure.
Veterans Day. So I'm going to give it a name here, say Create. And it goes out there. This is all out in the cloud. So it gives me my spreadsheet behind. And it gives me a question here. It says, enter a title for your survey. So I'll type in Veterans Day. And then it says, enter a description. And then enter your first question right here. So give me a question about Veterans Day, Cindy.
All right. We'll see how everybody's history knowledge is. We know that, yeah, we just passed Veterans Day, but mm-hmm. very few people know where Veterans Day came from.
Okay.
And so, little history, when World War I officially ended with the signing of the Treaty of Versailles on June 28, 1919, the fighting, however, had ended 7 months earlier due to an armistice. The armistice was agreed upon on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, giving us November 11th. This day was regarded as the end of the war to end all wars. So, in November of 1919, which president proclaimed November 11 as the first commemoration of Armistice Day?
Okay, so what president commemorated Armistice Day? And then I'm just going to put a question mark there, and I can give it a question subtitle, but my response type, I've got text, paragraph, number, date, time, yes, no, or choice.
Okay, so just a pull-down menu that lets you choose.
And let's make this a choice. So let's say, let's do FDR as a choice.
All right.
Let's see, who else? Let's do Kennedy. Let's do Taft. And let's do Wilson as our four choices.
And so how many choices could you...
I haven't hit that limit yet. I'm just still experimenting with things here. I've got a few more spaces here, so I would say probably a dozen, no problem.
Wow.
And then I can provide a default answer if I want. Well, as teachers, we don't want to do a default answer. We'll let the students guess here.
Figure it out. You don't know, look it up.
Yeah.
Go to the Library of Congress.
So we'll come back in here and say done. And that goes out there, and it gives me a prompt, says add new question. Or if I'm finished, I can say share survey. So I'm going to go out and share the survey. And what this is doing is it's going out there, and it's going to generate a URL. So I'm going to create the web address. So it says anyone with this address can go out here and view this. And it's a great big long one. I'm going to hit the little shorten button here. And this is kind of, you'll start seeing these pop up. I see these every now and then in my Twitter stream and things, but you're on your iPad there.
I am.
Let's just run out and go to, ready?
Ready. Now, I don't have a SkyDrive account. So
it doesn't matter.
Oh, there it is.
Okay.
Very cool.
So use the, all right, so you've got the link there.
Right.
And let's go ahead and go select an answer.
Okay. And it shows me your title. So you could email this to students, mm-hmm. or if it's online, just provide a bookmark.
Yeah. So you send, like I said, an email or whatever.
So I choose my answer and then submit.
Uh-huh. Now watch over here.
Your response was received. There it is. Wow. And that actually looks the same as Excel.
It is
on
Excel.
On my computer. Right. I was curious if it would have a different look to it.
No. I mean, it's got the ribbon interface.
Right.
This is the Microsoft Excel web app. It's 100% free. It doesn't do some of the fancier macro things like mm-hmm. the full Office version of Excel. So it's kind of a watered-down version. But again, you can sign up for a SkyDrive account and get your Office web apps completely free.
Nice.
So, you know, this summer we were doing some things with Linux.
Yes.
So go out there and log in, and this is all on the web, just requires a browser. Right. So you can just go out there and access this. You never have to install, you know, that version of Office
right.
on a particular program. So for us here in the ITC, it's kind of nice to be able to have all this browser-based things that students are able to access, because I don't have to load, you know, Word, whatever version on this card of 30 different computers out there, which can take some time. So in a way, we're going to back to the future here, where we're relying upon mainframe computers out there in the cloud to do all the heavy lifting and processing, and then it's being delivered to us here in a browser state. But one of the really neat things, I was playing around with this earlier, is whenever you send that link out, if you leave this Excel spreadsheet open, you saw your answer pop up here.
It did.
In real time. So if I had, you know, five people, I would see, you know, all five of those answers coming up. So that's something new out there in SkyDrive.
And it's kind of cool because you don't have to learn a new program.
Right.
And so that familiarity of those programs that we already know, like Excel, is huge, mm-hmm. very appealing.
And if you need a little bit more heavy lifting in the full application, I mean, that knowledge is, you know, very easily transferable from this lightweight version to the full thing. So
nice.
So that's the Excel survey app out there in SkyDrive. Okay, what you have this week?
All right, I am getting ready to leave on for the National Conference for Social Studies in Seattle. And one of the things as I was getting ready for my trip, they had an app that you could download. It was a guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded it, got the app for my phone, mm-hmm. which is Droid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have it on my iPad. So mm-hmm. it worked on both. But it is such a neat little program because I can go through, it has a schedule for the entire conference, and as I'm looking at that schedule, I can choose sessions and mark them as something I want to attend, mm-hmm. it automatically puts them into my custom calendar.
Yes.
Or my custom schedule.
And you can select and, yeah.
Right. And it'll even send me a reminder and that. That's but, neat. You know, it'll have exactly where I need to go, what room and all of mm-hmm. that. But you can look. It'll tell you who the exhibitors are, who the keynotes. There's a thing of maps. So you mm-hmm. can look at different floors, different, you know, areas of the buildings.
Right. All there on your phone.
All right here. So instead of lugging that big book around that we are all used to.
And then I would suppose that if something changed, you know, in the schedule or something, because it would be digital, they could make the update right then and there.
Exactly. And actually, I already saw something. It said canceled.
Yep.
They have an option.
That's
and
not
so
uncommon.
It'll
yeah.
immediately give you the feedback. Another thing is you have communities within.
That's nice.
So you can, like, you know, click on that and find others with the similar interests and mm-hmm. what their recommendations are, or just communicate with them. So it's my first experience using the interactive guidebook.
I wonder
guidebook.
If they have anything with like Twitter or Facebook or anything, if they have any links to the social medias or, you know, like some of the hashtags and things that we follow along. Do they have a hashtag for your conference yet?
I'm sure they do. I don't see it on here, but I'm sure they do because, like you said, they're just everywhere mm-hmm. anymore. And so I'm guessing that we'll be seeing them all over the place when we get there. But I just thought this is just a great tool. And as I was looking at it, you can download guidebooks. They have them from, you know, conferences and that, but also schools and community centers and museums mm-hmm. are creating them. So last time we talked a little bit about those enhanced books.
Right.
You know, this doesn't really have the interactive features. Like, it'd be cool if, you know, you could click on a presentation and it would have a little snippet of a presentation by someone to see mm-hmm. if that's really where you want to go or what you want to do. But, you know, it's a neat technology that I think is going to be evolving. And like I said, I like the fact they had it for universities, for students who are considering doing tours
right.
of different universities, incoming freshmen or transfer students. It gives them one more way to interact mm-hmm. with campus and learn a little bit mm-hmm. about campus. So,
you know, this is one thing, you know, I've been getting some emails and things from various professional organizations and things and talking about the mobile apps and things. But one of the difficulties there, we were just talking about it a little bit earlier. I'm also in the market. My contract's up on my smartphone. So I'm trying to make a decision now. I've been Android here for the last mm-hmm. 3 years, and they've got some, you know, really fantastic Android phones coming up. But now that Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 is out now, I'm also curious about that ecosystem. But the problem is, you know, that this conference or the conference organizers would have had to choose. It's like, okay, I'm going to have to do Android. I'm going to have to do, you know, iPhone.
Right.
Those are the two major ones. And now then Windows is coming on board. So I really see it being split in about thirds. And you have one developer developing on three different platforms. That's asking a lot.
That is. That's.
But then, you know, we have the HTML5 with the web apps. I think that's a way a lot of folks are going to kind of compromise. And it would be a compromise because you would have to have internet connection to use an HTML5 web app. And this thing here, you know, since you have it local, I assume you're going to be getting on a plane. So you may or may not have access. I doubt if you have access to Wi-Fi on the plane.
So, some,
you know,
of them,
you know, having that all local and things there, that's really nice.
Right. That I can, you know, because I did have to download that specific guide.
Right.
So so I can access it whenever I'm not.
Which also
online.
Brings us to those. It's like how many gigabytes of storage do you need? Because
right.
the more you do of that, the more storage you're going to need, which is why I'm a fan of SD cards. So you can just expand that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's a neat app. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of those. That wraps it up for episode 140 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom
and Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.